man, that ball got out of here in a hurry.
Just a bit outside.
You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
It's time for Powell at the Park.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Cubs, Sox, all your Chicago baseball news.
Dynamite drop in money.
Here's your host, Kevin Powell.
Play ball!
Much to talk about on this week's episode of the Powell at the Park podcast, episode number 20. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. I'm Kevin Powell. On this week's episode, James Fegan from The Athletic. He and I react to Michael Kopech's debut with the White Sox. Always love talking to James. And Tony Andracu, I believe this is like his fourth or fifth appearance on the podcast, but I just love talking Cubs with Tony, so I always kind of revert to Tony when I want to have a good, lengthy conversation about all things Cubs. He's from NBC Sports Chicago, Fegan from The Athletic. And I also had one of our production guys here at WGN who's been around the radio world in Chicago now for, I think, two decades, something like that. So he is a production whiz, and actually, that intro you just heard, the Welcome to the Powell at the Park podcast, that was produced by Ernie Scanton, and that's his voice on that. He also he's done all sorts of stuff. The guy's a whiz, and that's actually how we start the episode this week. On the rundown, I'll talk to Ernie Scanton about his production career and his life in the radio world. Well, every week I start the podcast, the episode, with the rundown. I came up with this segment. It's just normally my ramblings about all sorts of different things, Cubs and White Sox and baseball related. Sometimes I go into food rants. I think I even did some golf talk once. But this week I want to do something different. Every episode you hear that open, which is the Powell at the Park. Since he's next to me, why don't you do it?
Powell at the Park.
That's the voice of Ernie Scanton, who is a production whiz here at WGN, and he helped me. I still owe you like a burger and a beer for this, Ernie. I've been promising you that for like a year now.
I can eat a burger. I can always take a burger.
That's Ernie Scanton. He's the one of the production guys here at WGN. It's a kick-ass open that you did for me, Ernie. I owe you big for that. I love it. You have the production skills, which are amazing. You have the voice. So recently I thought of this because Sports Central is what Adam Hogue and Mark Harmon do like once a week. It comes up on the web. It's just a podcast about other things. But you put together this awesome open for them on Sports Central. First of all, thanks for jumping on the podcast.
Appreciate it. I don't get to do this often, so it's pretty cool.
You should be on more often, because listen to those pipes, man. I mean,
thank you.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Well, let's talk about the world of production. How did you get into this whole thing? How long have you been doing radio production? Because you've been here for a while. You were at ESPN for a while as well.
I was
correct?
At ESPN almost 10. I was at the Score for a few years, back to ESPN, to here when we did 87.7 The Game. WVON, back to here. I've done stuff on the side. Almost 20 years. Almost 20 years doing this.
So how did you get into radio and production and things like that?
It's funny. I was driving down the road and I heard Mike North spewing some hate-filled
nonsense,
rhetoric.
Nonsense, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I can do this better. I can do this. And the first commercial was, if you want to be on the radio, go to Illinois Center for Broadcasting. I was like, yeah, yeah, my wife's been bugging me, yeah. And I literally went to that place that night and I signed up and 20 years
is
later,
that right?
I promise you, it just, yeah.
The point of that story is advertising on radio works.
It does, I guess it does. My wife,
if anybody's listening and has been wondering, yeah.
So you should come in and let me voice your spot.
Damn right.
Advertise on the radio and then people will come.
Exactly.
It's true, my wife had been bugging me to go back to school. And I had a pretty good job. I was running a medical warehouse, but she was like, you want to do more, you should do more. So I did. And you ask how I got into, I wanted to be on air at first. So obviously you go and everyone wants to be on air. But the minute I sat behind a computer and I started doing this, it was amazing to me. It was absolutely amazing that I could take all this creativity in my head and put it down here, and people could hear it, laugh, and joke, and have fun. And that's why I never thought about going on air again.
Well, that's what I love about yourself and Chris Duffy, who does imaging and production here as well, is you guys like get how radio should sound. It should sound fun. Sometimes it's serious, but it should always be creative and different and should catch the listener's ear. You know what I mean? Like everything you guys do, whether it's Duffy or you, whether it's serious or funny or goofy or wacky, it catches the listener's ear. Right. And that's the whole point of radio, is catch the ear, keep them listening. And you guys do that, whether it's through bits that we have you guys produce, or whether it's simply a commercial, or whether it's a kick-ass intro like you did for my pod or for Sports Central.
Right. I think any production guy will tell you we love to do it. I've never found a production guy that didn't love his job more than anything else. It's a way for us to get creativity out that you couldn't do in another. Like, I can do things and I make stuff and I giggle because I hear something in it that I did that nobody else knows. And I'm like, that's funny.
Even on a smaller scale, when I was producing for Cochrane, that was one of my favorite parts, is when I would build little like intros and stuff like that.
The
thing with the production, I found when I was producing that, because as a producer, your mind like never stops. You have to be dialed into the show and et cetera, et cetera. And really, if you work in radio, the same way. But when you're thinking about production elements, you may be watching like TV with a group of people casually, and like 90% of the room is just zoned out, but you're like, wait a minute, what was that? And you catches your ear, and whatever it may have been, it was a weird sound from a commercial, it was a funny thing a news anchor said, you put it in the memory bank, and the next day you're like, let's go to work, let's mix it in, let's have fun with it, let's throw some music in.
So. When I watch movies at home especially, I watch with a pad and a paper and I take times and stuff. My daughter's always like, what are you doing? I'm going to steal that.
Right,
I'm
going
to use that. Songs I hear, beats I hear. And it's the funniest thing. Like, I'm a hip hop guy to my soul. This is not a hip hoppy station. This is not a
WGN. No,
no,
we're not walking around.
So the best thing is when I can still incorporate what I love into this station, and it's a little harder. But I still do it, and I do it a lot. You'll hear some beat behind something, you're like, oh, all right, okay. But then you hear like John Williams speaking, and you're like, but that works, and it does kind of work.
So right. That's how you deliver it.
Yeah.
Do you have your own audio bank of drops and music?
Oh, my God.
And like thousands. How extensive is
thousands.
That?
Thousands. I have them on different. I have one here. I have one here that I'll show you. I know you guys out there can't see it, but I have one that has movies, TV shows, any sort of drop like that. You'd be surprised. And then at home, I have hard drives filled with stuff, just absolutely filled with stuff that you never know. And sound effects, too. I like sound effects and drops as I try and find my thing without stop talking. Here we go. So like, if you go into this, like, you'll see movies. These are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of drops of stuff that, you know, like, it's just there. Oh snap. You know, it's just stuff that you can play at any time, and, you know, I love them. But I don't know. It's a good time. It's a good time. It's fun.
Okay, so let's play, if you don't mind. I think I told you we'd play the one that people have already heard. So if they're listening to this, they already heard the open. But we'll play that in a second. But can we play the Sports Central one? Do you have that queued up? Okay, this is the intro that Ernie made for Adam Hogue and Mark Harmon for our Sports Central show.
Sports Central.
Blackhawks fans around the world, you've endured 49 years of frustration.
Magic's three-point attempt blocked.
Walter Payton, Mike Ditka.
This is going to be a tough play.
And the Chicago Bulls have won their first ever NBA championship.
The Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup.
Cubs in the World Series.
Hungry Chicago finally champions on this January day in New Orleans.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
This is Sports Central.
All right, let's continue this love fest.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Ow!
With Adam Hogue and Mark Carman.
Holy Moses!
Sports Central.
All right, so Ernie, that gets me jacked up. That gets me pumped up.
That's the idea.
Like, that makes me want to keep listening. So when you built that and you started from scratch, I'm sure Adam and Mark went to you and just said, hey, can you build this a fresh intro?
Generally how it is. They say, we need an open. So I always ask, what do you want an open? First thing I thought, what do you want to open? And you guys will give me, like, I want this. And then some people go way overboard. And you know you can't do all of that.
Right.
Open should probably be 30, 45 seconds. You don't need 2-3 minutes in an open just because you get bored.
Yeah.
I want you to get excited and be ready for that show and be like, And that's kind of what it is. And I started that out with, like, they gave me no sort of
blank
guidance.
Slate.
They just said, here, I want, you know, it's me and Mark Harmon now. So I was like, okay. I listened to the old one that Duff did, and I kind of just took his little words, and then I started thinking about what's going to get somebody jacked up to listen to this, and they cover all sports, not just one. So then I started thinking about, ooh, championships. Oh, and if you notice, it's the first championship of the Bears, the Bulls, the White Sox in a long time, the Cubs, and it's all their first ones that happened in the last, like, 10, 20 years. And I just grabbed it open, and then I threw that little radio so it sounds like they're in its old time, and you just get progressively jacked up until, you know, the White Sox win.
Well, you and I were listening to it, and we're like throwing our fists in the air. Like, I'm ready to go. Awesome.
And that's what it should be. You should be jacked. When that thing opens, I want the host to be like, welcome in to Sports Center, man. Like, they're jacked. Because if you don't have a happy, good host, a jacked up host, you have a boring garbage show.
I'm with you, man. Have fun.
Yeah, you want to have fun. And then the people get jacked up. They hear it. And you should see me. Like, when I'm done, I'll listen to an open like four or five times. Like, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
This is great.
Proud of your work.
You do. You get proud of it because you know it sounds good. And
so how long does something like that take you to make from start to finish? Like when you start to let the wheels go a little bit?
About an hour and a half-ish, 90 minutes, something like that. Just because you have to go and find everything.
Finding, I
like to grab
everything.
Yeah, you have to go find the open. You have to find. And being in a radio station, it was easy in a sports station because I just literally went into the stuff and grabbed things. Yeah. Here, I have to go find it. I have to search.
Because it's such a wide range of things we talk about. With sports, it's very centralized. You know what it's going to be.
And you always keep the good highlights. I keep every highlight. Everything that I do, I keep. So
that's awesome.
I have it somewhere, but it's about an hour, 90 minutes. But it's fun. It doesn't seem like it to me. I sit there, and I do it at home. My kids will be wandering around. I have headphones on. I don't even think about it. And then I'm done. I look up. I'm like, oh, maybe my daughter's boyfriend has left or someone's left. I get so totally focused in. I don't think about anybody else. My wife will be hitting me and stuff. Stop. We're working.
Working. Do you have a piece of production through your entire career that you're most proud of?
Whatever. I do. It's funny. This happened my first year in radio. So I get out of school and I'm at at ESPN, and there's this board game. It's made by a company called Catico, and it's from like the 50s, the 60s, and it was a baseball board game that kids played. So they would literally roll dice and then move their players and play the board game. So we had the idea to have the all-time White Sox play the all-time NFL or all-time Major League Baseball stars on a Catico game. So we had Bill Melton and God, what was his name? He just died. The New York Yankee. The New York Yankee that played for the White Sox. God, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
You know who I mean. He ran the bases backwards. He was one coach. Bill Melton was the other coach. Then we actually drew names of all these people. It was like Babe Ruth, and it was basically almost like the All-Star Yankees against the All-Star White Sox. That's what it kind of came down to. And they literally played a game and wrote down what happened. So they would roll the dice and say Harold Baines hit a triple, scoring Frank Thomas. Then, in between a doubleheader, I had John Rooney and Ed Farmer actually call the game.
That's awesome.
So they call the game in between a doubleheader, and they do the whole nine innings. We played nine innings, and it was I'm sitting in my studio listening to them down the line, like, oh my God! And they're, and it is a ball! It's way back! Gone! So then I took that call, ran it through a filter to make it an old-time filter, like with crackles in it, and make it an old-time game, and I made a baseball game. I literally, from every call, like, peanuts, popcorn, get your popcorn, peanuts. I was every other voice in there except the calls. So I was get your peanuts here. And like I made an actual game. I won an award for it. And it was like my first year in. It was unbelievable. It took me like a month.
We did
the pregame. We did the commercials. So like I went and got all these old time commercials, like Walgreens, put them in, and so everything was done. It was a complete baseball game from top to bottom.
How long was it?
It was, the whole game lasted about an hour, hour and a half.
Did you guys play it all back?
We played it on the air. We played it on the air, and literally I finished inning 9 as they were in inning 3. Like, that's how long it took. Like, because I had to put together everything. I'm like, just leave me alone. I'm going to get it done, I swear to God. Right. And they're, like, taking things, and I'm shoving. I'm like, okay, you got inning 7. You got inning 8. You got to bring it. And, like, I'm just throwing stuff to them, and they finally played it. And when I walked out of the studio, there were people in the hallway, like, clapping for me. And I was like, oh. Like my first year, I thought it was. Like, doesn't everyone do this? Like they're like, no, Ernie, that's amazing, and they sent it off and it won an award or something. And that's my favorite piece of.
I gotta hear this.
I actually have it. I'll grab it.
Bring it in this week or something.
I was actually pretty proud of it because it was funny. Here's the thing. As you keep going, you start thinking of things that you should be hearing, and you're like, oh. Popcorn here, get your popcorn, popcorn, peanuts, beer here, and you just like make it up. You start thinking, you try and find it, and you're like, forget it. I'm
it's
just
the beauty of radio right there,
it
right?
Is.
You
it's
can
great.
Enter an entire baseball game by the power of production.
And I did, and it played well. It was just pretty cool to have like Bill Melton and these guys making the calls, and it was funny. And we had interviews in the middle, like they interviewed Pee Wee Reese. You know, so we got somebody who was like, hey, Pee Wee, so how was it like playing with Jackie Robinson the first time? Well, you know, Jackie was a wonderful guy. And right. It was just super cool. It was, and that's
dang, that's awesome. Do you have a favorite host or a favorite
you.
Host?
Dude, come on, KP.
Of all your years, like your favorite host that either one that you liked listening to, whether you even worked with them or not, just a favorite host that you listened to, and two favorite hosts that you have worked with.
Favorite one I worked with was probably Yurko. Like,
yeah.
I just loved Yurko. And Harry Tynewis, too. I love Harry.
Yeah.
I can be honest, there's not many that I disliked working with, and dislikes tough. Like, maybe I didn't like their character, the way they did certain things.
I found in this market, because it is one of the top markets, I think everyone realizes, I don't think there's as much ego as people think. Like, I think for the most part,
you've
people at this level, you've, like, what? Why would you have an ego? Like,
yeah.
You've made it. You
you've
know kind of
made it.
I've never had really nothing but good experiences with, like, major market.
Right.
Of course, there's going to be a handful out there.
There's
but
people that
for
have.
For the most part, like, I started in the smaller markets, and there's, like, weird jealousy because people are, like, pissed that they're in the market 200 and not in market 3.
So, is there a lot of backstabbing people trying to get
like
you?
Not like that, but, like, it's just a different atmosphere when you get up here because people really. Realize how lucky you are to be here.
It's the majors.
So.
Like you're
but
done
everybody
with
knows
a.
that, no matter
right.
what. No matter right. how long, how great you are at this whole radio thing, whether you've
right.
been doing it for 20 years, everyone, like, I talk to people here at GN, they're all like, we can't believe we're doing this
it
stuff,
is. It, you know, for me, I remember going through you're never going to make it in Chicago. Yeah. I've actually never left Chicago. I got, don't get me wrong, I got lucky. I worked my way through, but I had a family. There was no question I wasn't leaving Chicago. Like,
right.
I had kids and a wife and a house, and this was like a second job type thing I was trying to make work, and thankfully, through hard work, it did work, but I never left Chicago. I got lucky. You know, people are like, what did you do? I just talked.
Bounce around, be lucky. Yeah.
I'm an affable person. I work.
Everybody likes Ernie.
I work my butt off. I don't, that's one thing, I don't shirk. I work very hard. If I made a mistake, you can yell at me, whatever. I won't do it again, hopefully. I'll do whatever you want me to do. There's nothing here I won't do for somebody.
Right.
You need me to sweep the bathroom? I'll sweep the bathroom, whatever.
I'm with you, man.
I love what I do.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I get to go watch sports and do whatever. I mean, my 10 years at ESPN, dude, I saw the White Sox win the World Series. I was in the locker rooms. I almost went to Houston. Like, I've seen, I for 1 year, I had the Bulls pass, and I would walk into the locker room. I'd say, what's up to Duhon? We're probably going to get a beer later. Sorry, Chris. And Ben Gordon, I'd go, hey, what's up, fellas? And I knew all of them.
That's
and then
awesome.
I'd walk out, and I'd walk across the corner of the court and go and sit in the bar or whatever, because I didn't really have a seat. I had a press pass. And so one day, the security guard who knew me is like, Ernie, why do you do that? I was like, because I can.
Right. Why not?
Because
I was just in the Bulls locker room.
Because I can.
Yeah.
And finally, at the end, Sabrina Brewster caught me, like, the last 10 games. She's like, what do you do here? I was like, I'm the producer
I'm
for
producing.
ESPN? She's like, no, you don't.
Keeping an eye on the boys, you know?
Like,
I got to keep the pulse of the team. What I got to do here?
She told me, she's like, no, you don't. Just stay out of the way. I was like, okay. So that was like the solely greatest year of my life, was going to every Bulls game. And me growing up, I just wanted to be around sports.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was a great athlete. It was decent, but I get to stay around. I did get to stay around until now. But I love WGN. I love you guys. I love the ESPN, but the familial aspect here, the family, just the way everyone gets along,
yeah,
it's not cutthroat. It's we all help each other. We all
right.
pull in the same direction. We all... It's a great place. I love it.
Great place to work, and you make it even better. Ernie, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, sir. I don't do this all, but I appreciate it. Let me know what other production you need. I got you.
That's Ernie Skatton. He's a production whiz. What would be your official title here? Production guy? I just go production man or production man.
Chris would be considered more the production guy. I'd be considered commercial / engineer because, you know, I go out and I do shows.
That's true.
So I'm half part-time engineer.
If you ever see a GN out on the at restaurants and bars at sporting events, Ernie's out there every once in a while.
Nah, me and Adam Phillips do most of them, and so now I'm starting to get that a lot more. They send me out, which is cool. It was hard to learn it, but I finally got it down.
Yeah,
I didn't have to call in this week and say, hey, how do you do this?
Right. What does this button do?
But it's so I would say commercial director on one side and engineer on another.
I'll call you production whiz and all-around great guy. How about that?
You're
the best. That's Ernie Skatton. He's the man. Thank you for jumping on the podcast.
I appreciate it.
Thank you to Ernie. That was awesome. The guy is super talented. Ernie Scanton. He does a ton of great work here at WGN, and I'm very appreciative of him doing some production stuff for this podcast as well. So thanks to Ernie. All right, next guest on the podcast, James Fegan from The Athletic. He and I talked all things White Sox, specifically Michael Kopech's Major League debut. We're now joined by James Fegan from The Athletic. He covers the White Sox. He covers them well. He knows the White Sox just about as well as anybody on the beat. And appreciate you jumping on the podcast, James. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks for having me.
You know, the 2019 schedule for the White Sox was just released, so I figure we would take the next 45 minutes and do a game-by-game prediction for next year. Are you in on that?
Yeah, let's do it.
It seemed kind of random. I wasn't anticipating a 2019 schedule release today, but I guess when it's ready, it's ready. So they sent it out. But I wanted to talk to you, of course, to get your reaction, your thoughts on Michael Kopech. The floor is yours. What did you see last night?
I think you saw all the stuff, pretty much. I mean, I think people maybe got hyped to the idea that he was going to throw 100, but he's been kind of sitting in that kind of lower band for the sake of control for a few months now. Greatly to his benefit, as you can see from his Charlotte numbers. You know, he actually sat mostly 96-98, and he used it on the upper level of the zone with kind of using a lot of the carry and the run action that he has up there. That's pretty much where all three of his strikeouts were in the second inning. He threw what I have to imagine is one of the greatest changes of his life to Robbie Grossman. It just looked, you know, if that's something he has on a consistent basis, that he's going to be awesome. And, you know, you saw him use both a slider and curveball very comfortably. So, you know, it was brief, and, you know, he had an insane number of foul balls. He could probably, some guys would get through two innings on 16 pitches. Kopech had 16 pitches fouled off, so that kind of ran up his pitch count. Right. But as far as seeing the stuff and seeing everything that people would be raving about or the reason that you would come out to the park to see this guy, it was on display, albeit for about half hour last night.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the fact that he was still kind of sticking around 96, 97, 98, because we've heard from Kopech over the past month or so what's been working for him down in AAA, and we talked to Steve McCaddy, the AAA pitching coach, the other day as well, and they both said that he's finally found a way to dial it back a little bit and not throw it 100 miles per hour. I think I was maybe most impressed by that because, man, the adrenaline's got to be pumping there. To have that discipline and command to keep it dialed back and keep doing what's been working for you instead of going out there and trying to throw 100, to see him be able to kind of command himself and have that the discipline on the mound to stick with what's been working for him, I thought that was pretty impressive.
I mean, yeah, because it's not as simple as just throw it softer,
right,
or guide it in, because he has naturally a power delivery and you can throw off your entire mechanics just trying to, like, you know, groove something in, and he's not trying to do that. So to be able to kind of find a balance and rhythm where he's still generating all the power in his legs that he naturally has when he's at his best with delivery and kind of pair it back just a touch to give him a little bit more control, you know, that's something that takes a few months, you know, preferably in AAA away from prying eyes to get going, and he really has done it.
Yeah, you mentioned that changeup too, and I thought you mentioned it's probably one of the best changeups of his life. That's also impressive considering the stage, considering it's his first game in the major leagues. We've heard about the changeup all year, and he's kind of changed the mechanics on it a little bit, but that was really good to see. But it was a heavy dose of fastballs, and I was wondering if your thoughts on that, because, you know, after the game we asked him about that, and he said, look, I'm going to throw the fastball until they start hitting it. So it tells you the kind of confidence he has in that pitch. But then to go see him throw that changeup, which has basically been in development all season, I thought that was a nice showing from him as well.
You know, that's definitely going to be something I'm watching closely over these last couple of weeks. Is, you know, his fastball is elite. It's absolutely amazing. It's, you know, top of the scale grade fastball, and just was completely overwhelming in Triple A. And, you know, even his entire trek to the minors, you kind of had to force the development of other pitches, because if he wanted to just concern himself with getting out in Double A and Triple A, he could throw that fastball over 75% of the time. Talking to the Minnesota side last night, they really scouted him knowing that he was going to do that, and they were really prepared for that, and they were trying to basically, the challenge for them was to get on top of it, and, you know, they weren't able to do it much. Who knows how it would have gone later on in the game, but the book will definitely be out for him across the league, and, you know, it may be be that his fastball is just so elite, it's going to overpower guys, but I'm very curious to see if it forces an adjustment in his approach a little bit as time goes on. I mean, it's not like he's got flops that he's turned into with his secondary pitches, so it's not a major problem, but it could be an adjustment in his approach to be a little bit more breaking ball and ideally changeup heavy, because there'll be less stress on his delivery to kind of throw out of the changeup slot.
Yeah, you know, it was just two innings, as we said, but you could feel the energy with the crowd, and looking over at the Sox bullpen when I got there, it was 5, 6, 7, 8 rows deep of White Sox fans just all huddled around the bullpen watching the guy warm up. And I know you were there last year for Moncada, and there was a lot of energy in the park, but last night just felt a little different, and I don't know what you make of that, if it's just because he's the pitcher and he's got so much hype, but I just thought it was a really cool night, albeit a short one for Kopech. You could feel the energy and excitement from the crowd.
I mean, it's crazy. I can't imagine doing that at your work where people are oohing and eyeing like every warm-up pitch.
Right.
That just seems insane. And you know, some of it is just that, you know, a pitcher's debut, he gets center stage much more than Moncada does, standing out at second base and getting, you know, 4 plate appearances does, and I think that's part of it. But as I wrote yesterday, Kopech's a guy who, you know, he was a live arm when they acquired him, but he's probably more than anyone that the White Sox have debuted, a prospect who's really his star rose in the system, and the fans have gotten to see him develop and, you know, add so many tools to his game and mature in such a way, even just over a brief 2 years. But he probably feels a lot more of their own and not just, you know, a trade piece than maybe some of the other prospects that they debuted.
I think it's fun for Sox fans to daydream about a potential Michael Kopech, Carlos Rodon, Dylan Cease top 3 of your rotation, and then who knows with Rinaldo and Lucas what they become. That's starting to look like a serious a seriously deep rotation, potentially. I know that's sort of a stretch, and we still got a long way to go here, but even if it's not all 5 of those guys and you have some sort of free agent signing, things are starting to kind of fall in place for the starting pitchers for the Sox organization.
You got Dane Dunning. You got a lot of guys who could fill out the back of rotation, like Spencer Adams, Bernardo Flores, Jimmy Lambert had a great year. I could go on for the next half hour. Cade McClure looked good before he got hurt. How far do you want me to go?
Right. No, it's looking good. That's why I've sort of been – that's why I like the Madrigal pick, and I think they should stick on the offensive side of things in the draft next year as well. Curious as to how you think they should approach the amateur side of things. Do you think they should just stick with the position side, considering they've got a pretty good stock of talent on the pitching side of things?
I wouldn't really get specific on one side or the other. I mean, you know, you can draft a high school pitcher next year with the idea that when Carlos Rodon is hitting free agency, he's going to be, what, 22, 23, and he's kind of the next stage of your rotation. So you're definitely always, you know, stacking waves of talent, even if you have a kind of a strong point in the major league side right now. I mean, you wouldn't hold off on, you know, drafting the first baseman because you have Jose Abreu in the majors or anything like that.
Right.
So, and obviously all those are, whoever you get, as long as they're good, they're effectively currency as far as trades or trading guys in the major league level to make room for, you know, talented replacements. You know, you can do so much with it that you don't really need to restrict yourself in one way. You can always just be pretty flexible for what you think is the best talent.
I wanted to touch on Yoan Moncada for a minute. James, there seems to be a bit of a panic creeping in for White Sox Nation because the strikeouts are obviously glaring. He isn't having a great year, but I continue to tell Sox fans, and look, we've seen this forever in sports, and particularly in baseball, because we follow prospects from a very young age, and they're hyped so much, more than any other sport. So if they get off to a slow start, people panic. And I said, look, you shouldn't overreact in either direction. If Yoan Moncada for the final month of the season tears it up out there, I don't think we should anoint him as superstar. But if he goes through these struggles right now, we also shouldn't call him a bust. He's still very young, and it's not to say that there hasn't been any development, because maybe he is learning from this. I wonder if Kopech getting called up, do you think that could take a little bit of the pressure off him? I had a feeling he was going to have a decent game last night, and he did. He had a homer and a walk, played pretty well in the field. What do you make of Moncada's season so far? And I guess, do you think Kopech being called up, and even if Eloy gets called up, you think that it could help Moncada?
You know, if Yoan Moncada was like a top 75 prospect when they called him up, I would say, you know, there are signs. You know, the strikeouts are worrisome. You wish there was more progress, but you still see the raw tools. you know, he's still effectively scratching as a, you know, a slightly below average hitter playing an up the middle position. That's essentially a league average guy, and he's 23, and, you know, it's only going to be upward from here. And, you know, physically he still has so much upside. I get the fact that since he was number one overall in the world as a prospect, yeah, that you were hoping to see him be more precocious than he is. And if you, you know, really are, had your dreams of him being a superstar, face of the franchise, borderline Hall of Famer who wipes away all memory of Chris Sale, it's not happening fast enough to give you that optimism that's going to happen to that level. I still think they have an above average starter for years to come down the road, but the fact that, you know, the adjustments that he's making as far as, you know, keeping himself alive in at bats and developing as a right-handed hitter, because it's happening on the more normal, gradual level that you would expect from a good prospect, maybe in a very good prospect, but maybe not, you know, a prodigy. I understand some of the disappointment while also thinking, you know, you've got an asset here that's, you know, definitely worth waiting on.
Do you think that Elway is going to get called up this year?
You know, I've stuck to my guns all year thinking it's going to be sometime in August, and, you know, I'll go down with the ship expecting that he should be here. You know, they've said all along that it's not about service time, and, you know, at this point, I think they have some proof in the pudding as far as Kopech being here. And, you know, if it is not about service time, then I think Eloy is, you know, showing he's ready. I haven't been down August, but I think he should be here. I would be less of a surprise to be wrong, but I'm going to stick and say yes, he will be here.
All right, last question. Do you think Rick Hahn will find a taker for James Shields?
I don't know. You know, I really could see him sticking here. I don't think he'd be too bothered by it. You know, I don't think any of his team would be bothered by it. I'm working on a longer piece on him, so if he could hold off for, like, I don't know, 8-10 days, I don't think he can, because I think, you know, August 31st is coming up soon, but if he could hold off until I'm finished, I got a few more pieces I got to get. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you for listening, Rick.
You know, I, real quick on Shields, like, I've Sox fans should appreciate what he's done this year. I mean, he hasn't necessarily been this dominant pitcher, but he's reinvented his game. He's been a good teammate, and he's pitched pretty well for the most part. And I'm kind of surprised. I don't know if teams are sort of shell-shocked from that year-and-a-half stretch where he was just getting destroyed out there, and that's all anybody thinks of him. Maybe they haven't been watching close enough this year. But he's been a pretty good pitcher, and he's given them quality starts, and he's going deep in the game. I mean, you find a taker for Luis Avila, and you think somebody would go for James Shields.
I mean, it's the same calculus last year with Miguel Gonzalez, where you could just go around the league and look at everyone's fifth starter or of all these teams that are vying for a playoff spot and say, Miguel Gonzalez is better than that guy. Miguel Gonzalez is better than that guy. I can do the same thing for Shields right now. I mean, Oakland is, you know, I don't know what kind of magic they're you know, weaving for the rotation to hold up as well as it has, but, you know, James Shields could be one of the best five starters on that team. James Shields could be one of the best five starters in Seattle, so I could go around the league and find some more openings like that. So it's an August waiver trade for like a month and a half or a month of the guy. You know, it's not going to be super expensive, and he'd probably make some team better. So, yeah, it makes sense that it should happen. So it is a little surprising it hasn't.
Yeah, and he could eat some innings for a team that's in contention for the playoffs, give your bullpen some rest down the stretch, all that, all those sorts of things. James, anything you'd like to plug on your on the website? I will say, if anybody hasn't read it already, James went down to Texas and met with the Kopech family earlier in the year, and you just had a great write-up. I read that before yesterday's game, and I think I read it when it first came out, but I highly recommend anybody reading that, and it's a really good long-form piece from James on Michael Kopech. I like the part when he told his dad that when he was 4 years old, he's going to be a big leaguer. That was a pretty cool thing to see him yesterday with the family after he talked to us. They were all hugging and taking pictures and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I probably told my dad the same thing and be like, yeah, okay, you can be anything you want.
Right.
It didn't result in an insane training program in a pasture in Quezon, Texas, but, you know, that's why I'm not Michael Kopech.
Yeah, well, anybody who hasn't read it, you should read it. James is doing great work for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at J.R. Fegan. Appreciate you jumping on, James. Thanks a bunch, and I'll see you at the park soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, man. Thanks to James Fegan. Be sure to read his stuff at theathletic.com, and I recommend subscribing to their website as well. Great stuff happening at The Athletic. Up next, Cubs Talk, Tony Andracki, NBC Sports Chicago. Tony Andracki from NBC Sports Chicago now joins the podcast. Tony, I think you're the front runner, and the amount of times you've been on this podcast, huge honor for you. How do you feel about that?
Great. Yeah. I can't complain. It's nice. It's a good honor. It's like equivalent to a Hall of Fame, I'd say.
Yeah. Put it on your resume. It won't help you with anything, but I think you should at least throw it on there. The Cubs schedule for 2019 just released. I figured we'd take the next hour and go game by game prediction. You okay with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Speaking of the schedule, things are getting tight. I will admit that I pretty much had written off the Cardinals, though, just about a month or so ago, and I didn't think the Brewers really had a chance in catching the Cubs. And I don't know if either one of them is necessarily going to catch the Cubs, but they're certainly making it interesting. And, Tony, I think you and I had this conversation at the beginning of the year, how important it was for the Cubs to pull away in the division so they can go into the postseason rested, just like they did in 2016, rather than having a taxed bullpen or a taxed pitching staff in general. Things are getting a little tight here.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's, you know, obviously the Darvish news coming out, so they can't count on him at all. And, you know, the fact that, like, they really need Chris Bryant back. The offense is proof of that, clearly. But it's just, they also, you know what, they also could obviously use Brandon Morrow back as well. And, you know, they were hoping that Drew Smyly, that we might be thinking that he could be a week or so off at this time, but he hasn't even gone on a minor league rehab assignment yet. So there's not great news on the health front from the Cubs' perspective, but a guy like Daniel Murphy should help breathe life into this lineup.
Yeah, we'll get to Murphy in a second, but I haven't seen any or heard any Morrow updates. Have you? Do we know where he's at?
He threw a bullpen over the weekend in Pittsburgh. I believe it was Saturday, and it was only like 25 pitches, but he has to build up to, you know, throwing 2 to 3 more bullpens and then go on a minor league rehab stint, you know, where he will throw, you know, 2-3 games or something before coming back. So best case scenario is probably like, you know, September 7th to 10th range, and it's possible even after that at this rate.
Right. Okay, well, speaking of Daniel Murphy, as I talked to you here on August 22nd, the Cubs are currently on a streak of 5 straight games where their only run has come on a solo homer. 5 straight one-run games for the Cubs, all on solo homers. What's not working for them at the plate?
Pretty much everything. I mean, they're not having good at-bats. They're expanding the zone far too much. And, you know, when they are getting their pitch, like in Tuesday night's game in Detroit, I thought this was a kind of a perfect microcosm of the Cubs' offense. Schwarber was up with a runner on base, and he worked the count to 3-1, then got a fastball cookie right down the middle, and he fouled it back. And that's just what's happening. When they're getting good pitches, they end up fouling it back. They're not doing damage with them, or if they are, it's just that one pitch a game with the solo homer. So, and then, you know, Schwarber ended up striking out in the at-bat, and the Cubs obviously don't score that inning. So I think it's just, it's so much of that. And you know what? They haven't been lucky either, but it's not like they're hitting the ball with 112, you know, mile an hour exit velocity every time up either. So it's just been kind of a failure in all facets at the moment.
Yeah, it's been feast or famine. They're scoring 1 or 2 runs. And, you know, if you look at their overall run production and offensive numbers, they're all pretty good, but it's been one end of the spectrum by a game-by-game basis. It's 1 or 2 runs, or they burst out for 10 or 11 runs.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, really, since the All-Star break, it's not been 10 or 11 runs. They have not had those lopsided victories, and actually, in reality, they've had lopsided losses. You know, they've had some 7-0, 9-0, even that 18-5 loss against the Cardinals, too. So it's been a really, really tough stretch for the offense for about a month now, and obviously it's kind of come to a head in these last 5-6 games here.
Well, I love the Daniel Murphy trade. I don't know why anybody wouldn't love this trade. You basically gave up nothing for a guy that's a 300 hitter. He gets on base, and he's got plenty of power at the plate. What's there not to like about this deal?
The only thing not to like would be the fact that Murphy's 33. He was never a good defender at second base, and he's coming off a knee injury that kept him out for more than half the season already. So his defense is going to be very limited. We saw it when the Nationals came to Wrigley a few weeks ago, and it's just, you know, obviously he's not going to be a Gold Glove defender. So wherever he plays, you lose a little bit of defense, and that's kind of the one thing the Cubs have hung their hat on this year is that elite defense. That being said, he strikes out way less than anybody on the Cubs right now. He uses the whole field, goes to left field, and you know, he's just a professional at bat. So it would never hurt to have him, and, you know, especially a guy like Zerbe. top of the order. And then obviously if you get KB back as well. So it's a great thing for the Cubs lineup. Not great for their infield defense, but you know, they could always bring in Bodie or something in the ninth if they want a defensive replacement.
Well, that's why I think this deal works for the Cubs, because let's say Daniel Murphy starts at second base and Addison Russell's off the night and Baez is at short and Bodie's at third. The chances are more than likely, as long as Russell's healthy and just maybe getting a day off and maybe Matt is just playing the offensive matchups early in the game, you're likely not going to see Daniel Murphy in the field from like the seventh inning on, because this is the luxury that Madden's going to have now. This gives him even more options, which is, I don't think there's a manager in baseball that has more options in terms of guys that you can plug and play wherever basically you want, where you can get the pop and get three at-bats from Daniel Murphy, and then late in the game, throw Addison Russell back at short and move Baez to second.
Yeah, we actually already saw that exact formula that you just mentioned in 2015 with Chris Coughlin. He, for a stretch, you know, he would start, hit three for the Cubs, play second base, which he was obviously out of position at, and then he would get his 2-3 at-bats, come out of the game, and starting Castro would replace him in that sense. So I think that's very similar to what the Cubs could do. I think Murphy actually may even be the leadoff hitter against right-handed pitchers, especially, you know, moving forward, because the Cubs don't have a great option there. But yeah, you're right. I mean, especially Addison Russell is the guy that's impacted most because he's just not hitting. So as elite as he is defensively, they need a guy like Murphy in the lineup more than ever right now. And then Russell, unless he starts, you know, really heating up at the plate, he's basically a defensive replacement on this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just like the deal all around. I just think it gives them a lot of options, and it gives them mostly what they need right now with Chris Bryant out, and that's hitting. So I like the deal all around. Okay, let's get to you, Darvish. Cub fans not very happy with you, Tony, to say the least.
Yeah, they're not. And I mean, obviously some of it's unfair. Some of it is fair. I guess it just depends on what their criticism actually is. But, you know, at the end of the day, he'll go down his first year with the Cubs in 2018. He will have made about $500,000 for every inning pitched. And that's just rough.
How do I get one of those jobs, Tony?
Dude, I'm trying to figure out too. So if I let you know, or if I find out, I'll let you know. But yeah, it's just been just a miserable, you know, last calendar year for Darvish, including the World Series kind of meltdown with the Dodgers too. So
doesn't help. Jake Arrieta's having a real nice year out east and with Philly.
No, it's not, and I mean that's exactly what the Cubs would need right now, is a guy like that. Mm-hmm. So it's
steady. Arrieta would be perfect for the Cubs right now. Like that steady veteran arm to go with Lester off the top. I mean, that would be kind of a perfect situation where that whole rotation's had some fluctuations. And Arrieta, for the most part, has been a pretty steady rock in that Philly rotation.
Yeah, and he's also a guy that still gets a decent amount of swings and misses, even though he's kind of changed. He's not that 2015 version of Arrieta we see anymore. But, yeah, I mean, he gets swing and misses, which is the issue with the Cubs rotation right now. And he's a guy that, I mean, every single time that he takes the ball, you know that he could give you 7 or 8 shutout innings. And that's just, you can't really say the same for most of the guys on the Cubs at the moment. Obviously, Cole Hamels. But beyond that, it's difficult.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of frustrations with the Cubs fan base. And look, we can continue to say they're in first place. They have the best record in the National League. Their record in the American League would be, I think, like the sixth best. To put that into perspective, how much better the AL is, in my opinion. But I just feel like there's a lot of frustration for Cub fans, despite them being in first place, despite them having the best NL record. And I've sort of kind of like been trying to figure out, and I think it's because, one, it feels like we still haven't seen the Cubs play their best baseball for a long period of time. And I think Darvish has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Darvish getting hurt obviously had to move Montgomery into the rotation. Even though he's been good there, it's left a lack of a lefty presence in the bullpen. You know, Justin Wilson's had his walk issues. You know, Rosario, Dunsing, De La Rosa have had their ups and downs too. So I think it's just kind of filtered down through the rest of the team, Darvish's absence. But, you know, like you said too, they've been saying all year that they haven't had one of those runs that they have typically gone on the last three seasons, 15, 16, 17. But, at this point, I don't know if we're going to see it. You know, injuries have been a huge reason behind that. But they also, they don't have the hangover they did last year, and they're not coming out of the gate, blazing with 8 runs a game or something for a 2-week stretch. So they haven't put it all together. And if they do, they could run away with this division still. But at this point, it's tough to bet on that.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons, too, just a short few weeks ago, I was sort of shrugging off the Brewers and Cardinals is because we saw the Cubs really not play their best baseball in the first half, and they were in first place. They had a pretty big division lead and all those sorts of things. But then you look back at Joe Maddon's record post-All-Star break with the Cubs, and there's no other team even close. They dominate in the second half of the season. Right now, I think they're 1 or 2 games above 500 since the All-Star break. So that's kind of surprising to me. I thought this is kind of when they're going to kick it into high gears. That was a little surprising. So things have definitely got a lot more interesting here. And they still got a lot. They got a tough stretch where they go east. They play, I believe, a makeup game with Atlanta, then Philly. And they still got some games with St. Louis and Milwaukee. It's going to be an interesting final month. And I don't think the Cubs wanted that at all. I think that they have enough talent where they probably could have ran away with this division. They're just been underperforming for much of the year, it feels like.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And this is a really tough stretch. I mean, they just began the 23 games in 23 days stretch with a loss in Detroit to a rebuilding team and a pitching staff that is down on its luck all year. And they score 1 run. So it has been very difficult. And you're right, they're only 1 game over 500 since the break. And their run differential is also -31, I think, is what it is right now. So, I mean, it's at this point where it's like you look at that and it's clearly not a championship team for a month running now. But they do have the talent. And if they do start getting healthy in terms of Chris Bryant and Brandon Morrow, at least that would help. But, I mean, those guys are probably still, 2 weeks off at the very least. So the guys that are here have to perform. And that's really, it falls as much as anybody on Wilson Contreras and, everything else. And this is kind of what the offense is when Javi Baez isn't having the MVP-type impact that he had for the whole first half. And now, they're barely scoring 1 run a game.
Yeah, you look at the Cubs got to do work in these next 7 games, their homestand coming up, because you have the Reds and the Mets. You got to play really well in that stretch, because then after that, you're at Atlanta for a makeup game, then you're at Philly for a series, then you're at Milwaukee, and then you're at Washington, who basically just put up the white flag, and then you're back home, but it's against Milwaukee. This is a tough 2-week stretch here that could really kind of reshape where the landscape of the division and the landscape of a lot of teams that are fighting for the playoffs, like the Phillies, Atlanta, Milwaukee. And, I don't think Washington, despite being out of it, is going to go down without a fight. I mean, anytime the Cubs and Nationals get together over the past 2 years, it's been really exciting baseball. And then you come home and you got Milwaukee, you've got a stretch with Arizona, and then you've got that White Sox series late in September, and I don't think the Cubs even want to deal with that, because those are one of those weird rivalry games. Who knows? What if it's Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech that you're facing? Like, I don't think they want to see that. And then you finish with Pittsburgh and Cardinals. This is not an easy stretch to finish the season for the Cubs.
No, I mean, you're right. This is the only easy stretch, quote unquote, easy stretch right now. And
they got to make ground here.
Exactly. And the Reds, they've actually been, I think they're like 2 or 3 games over 500 as a team since June 1st. So, I mean, they're like right up there with the Cubs.
And they've played the Cubs tough all year, too.
Oh, yeah, they really have. And they've actually been a better team than the Brewers record-wise for about 3 months running now. So it's just it really is a tough stretch. And the Cubs, I mean, the last few years have every time they've gone to New York as well to play the Mets, things haven't gone well. So they have to figure something out quick. But maybe this all is the sense of urgency that they need. It's kind of lighting a fire under them.
You mentioned Javi Baez's MVP-like season. Who's got your vote? If you had a vote for the MVP in the National League, who would you go with?
I think at this rate, I would have to go with Matt Carpenter. I mean, he and Freddie Freeman are up there. Obviously, Nolan Arenado, too. But what Carpenter has done, I mean, he's gotten the Cardinals back in the playoff race almost single-handedly.
Yeah.
They fired their manager. They've been without their ace, Carlos Martinez, for a time. Obviously, Dexter Fowler's hurt. Tommy Pham's traded away. All these different things. And Matt Carpenter's been the guy that's carrying the load. So at the moment, I would say him. There is still a month to play, so we'll see
see, but Javi's, you know, 2-3 week stretch, and really since the All-Star break, he's cooled off so much that I don't even know if he's a top three candidate, maybe not even top five right now.
He's Tony Andracki. Read his stuff at NBCSportsChicago.com at TonyAndracki23 on Twitter. Tony, appreciate you jumping on, man. I'm sure I'll see you at the ballpark soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Thank you to Tony Andracki. Always appreciate him coming on. Thanks to James Fegan from The Athletic and to Ernie Scatton with the production guy here at WGN who does a lot of the production work here, including for this podcast. So thank you to Ernie and James Fegan and Tony Andracki. Really enjoyed this episode. Ton of fun. And please subscribe, review, and rate on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter at KPowell720. And have a great day, everybody.